This is the Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 120. I am your host, Adam Mangum. I am joined first by our special guest, Brian Logan. He is a former defensive back for the Cougars and currently works for BYU TV. He talks with us about what happened with the BYU offense and how it might be fixed. He also gives his assessment of the defensive backs and how they played in week one, and also what we might expect against Texas in week two. Matt and I then discuss many important things. We talk about the offensive line, we talk about Cody Hoffman and whether he might miss the second game, and we also preview the University of Texas game in Provo and give our bold predictions and over-unders. And of course, we talk about Ben Affleck as Batman. Again, this is the Rise and Shout Podcast. You can always download us on iTunes. You can now check out our video podcast, and all of this is available at loyalcougars.com, and you're going to listen to us right now. Welcoming a first-time guest to the podcast, former BYU Cougar and now on television on BYU TV, it's Brian Logan. Brian, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you guys for having me.
Well, we're excited to have you. Of course, I wish it was under better circumstances than this week, because it'll be a somber conversation.
It's always sad, you know. When we lose, you know, even though I'm not playing anymore, you know, I still feel the pain when we lose a game, and you know, I still feel the excitement when we win. So
yeah. Well, I'm sure, especially having been part of the team and knowing a lot of the coaching staff, and now in your new role, you know, getting to know some of the current players who you didn't play with back when you were on the team. So let's start with the first question that everyone, I'm sure everyone who's run into you or any show you've been on or anyone you've talked to, they want to ask the first question is, what did you think of the new offense? And do you think we'll see any major changes of the offense after just 1 week?
Yeah, well, I mean, my first impression was, you know, I was a little bit excited, because if you really notice in the beginning of the game, the offense was moving the ball. You know, there was nothing spectacular going on. You know, there's a few three and outs, but you can see just some small glimpses, and there's just some small flashes of, you know, just the potential of the offense and really how great they could be. Just ironing out a few things. And then, you know, once the rain delay happened, you know, the guys came back out and it was a completely different feel. You know, it's hard for guys to get going. So, you know, you didn't really see a lot of, you know, the ball being moved at all. And, you know, kind of just started to look like last year again. You know, it looked like just the offensive line wasn't playing well. It looks like they didn't really know what was going on. Taysom didn't have a lot of time to throw. Jamal was running in the back of, you know, his offensive linemen, you know, 3, 4, 5 plays in a row. So, you know, it just looked a mess after that point. And, you know, I think really the bottom line is that something has to be done with the offensive line. And until the coaching staff can get that figured out, you know, I really don't see any progress with the offense this year. So that's the biggest thing is the offensive line. You look at all the skill positions, the receivers, you know, there's about 6, 7 guys that can play. Same thing with the running backs. And you saw the performance of Jamal Williams and how great he did. But, you know, you still have 2 capable backs behind him. So, you know, when it comes down to the skill positions, even Taysom Hill, you know, they're pretty good there, but it's just that offensive line that needs the most work.
Yeah, definitely they struggled in that game, and that's probably putting it nicely. One of the things that was maybe a little bit of a surprise was there had been a lot of injuries on the other side of the ball in the defensive backfield, and we had a question on Twitter from one of our listeners, Andre Hutchins, who asked, "How did Robertson Daniel look as good as I thought he did?" And this is me talking, not Andre. I thought he looked pretty good too. So what was your take as a
as someone that's played that position. How did they look? Did they look as good as some of us maybe thought they did? And especially seeing that none of them were the projected starters even a couple of months ago.
Yeah, you know, Robertson, he did good. You know, he had a fairly quiet game, and that's always good when you are a corner.
Yeah.
You know, anytime that you're playing a game, you know, if you can go unnoticed as a quarterback, that means you did pretty good. You know, when you're making a lot of tackles, or if you are, you know, batting a lot of balls down, I mean, you know, from an outsider looking in, it looks great because of the stats, and you're on TV a lot, Howard, that means a lot of balls are getting thrown on you, which means you have to make a lot of tackles, and you have more of an opportunity to make plays on balls. But if you're not seeing a lot of that as a fan, then that's a good sign. That means you're covering up your receiver. The quarterback doesn't want to throw the ball. So, you know, I sat down and I was watching the game, and I that's what I really focus on a lot is the cornerbacks. And I was, you know, watching him particularly, and he looked really good. I don't think that it's fair for us to give him, you know, an A+ just because of how bad the Virginia's offense was. You know, they weren't clicking in all cylinders. You know, they barely had over 200 yards total as an offense. So, you know, it's just a little bit hard to give him, you know, the props that everybody else is. You know, I'm pretty hard when I critique players, and even more so when it comes to defensive back because I play the position. This week coming up against Texas is going to be his true test. You know, there's going to be guys that are veterans, you know, NFL guys that he'll play against, guys that are running 4.3s and 4.4s and real 4.3s, you know,
right.
And I just say that on paper, you know, these guys from Texas can actually run. So that's going to be his true test. It's going to be very interesting to watch.
No, absolutely. But at least, as you said, maybe it doesn't deserve an A, but at least a good first start. So we're looking forward. You mentioned Texas. You know, a lot of fans, and I've seen some of the press have written this too, that, man, maybe we went too fast and maybe we need to slow it down. And on that last drive, they could have slowed down. Do you think there'll be some type of adjustment to the speed of play on Saturday, or do you expect the Cougars to come out and play with the similar speed that we saw last week against Virginia?
Well, you know what, I would hope for the similar play to continue, just because it's kind of crazy, you know. And I'm nowhere near a football coach, and you know, I respect Coach Anai, and you know, he was on the coaching staff when I played in 2009. You know, with Max and Harvey and Dennis, and you know, he did a fantastic job that year. And you know, if I was in his situation, I wouldn't just throw it all out the window because I was, you know, unsuccessful the first game. And, you know, I would have the approach that, you know, I got a couple new guys here on the offensive line. It's a completely new system for a lot of these guys. You know, it's the first time for them playing under this system together. So I'd give it a little bit more time. You know, it's just unfortunate that. You know, they lost the game. It's unfortunate that they're playing a huge, you know, opponent in Texas. And, you know, I wouldn't really throw it out too fast. I would give it a couple more weeks for them to gel. You know, the biggest thing that I would look at for Coach and I, if they are making any changes in Coach Mendenhall, is to see the conditioning of that offensive line. And, you know, you look at the skill players and, you know, guys are, you know, 200 pounds, 215 pounds, they can run easily. You know, you look at these offensive linemen and they're 300 pounds plus, you know, some are a little bit lighter. But, you know, it's got to be a little bit harder for those guys. And, you know, for you to go fast and for you to go hard each and every play, you know, I'm just going to fly out and say it, it's not realistic, you know. So, you know, if you're running two running plays in a row and the offensive lineman is going as hard as he can, and then it's a third and five, the next down, you know, I'm pretty sure that the offensive lineman is going to be gassed, especially running, you know, back-to-back plays like that. So I think that in order to have this mindset of going hard and going fast, you have to look at your personnel and you have to look at the guys that are running it. You know, there was a interview today with Riker Matthews, and he just said, you know, one, I'm kind of beat up and I'm kind of hurting, you know, after hip surgery. But two, you know, it's really hard to go hard and go fast when, you know, you're sucking wind and, you know, you're struggling to breathe.
Right.
So right then and there, that shows you that, you know, that's not necessarily a good sign, coming out of fall camp, that, you know, the conditioning is just not where you like to see it.
Well, and you played in 2009 and 2010, so you played on one team that had a extremely good offense, led by Max Hall and some terrific skill players, obviously, and Pitta and Chambers and obviously Harvey Unga. And then you played also for the team in 2010, a 7-6 season, not nearly as successful overall, and an offense that was kind of the beginning of these offensive struggles for BYU. That's kind of, we're now into potentially year four of this. What is the difference, do you find, between the offense you played on, the offense you played against, I should say, in practice every week in 2009 versus the offenses we've seen the last few years? Is it just offensive line play? Is it, you know, scheme, or is it or do we just not have as many good offensive players? That kind of depth that you guys had in 2009.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that I have to say is just the depth. And you know, back then when I played, the offensive line was never an issue. I mean, when I first got to BYU in spring of 2009, I was just so fascinated at how big these guys were.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of these guys, I was coming up to, you know, barely their chest. You know, they're 6'5" and 6'6". You know, they're a whole foot taller than me. You know, nothing like junior college. Junior college, these guys are, you know, 6'2", maybe 6'3", these offensive and defensive linemen. So that's something that I was, you know, really proud about, is that, hey, you know, we have an offensive line. And, you know, it just made sense of, you know, why Max can throw and why Harvey ran so well. And obviously, you know, if they're throwing the ball good, the receivers are catching the ball good. And, you know, so guys like O'Neal and Dennis and even, you know, Andrew George had, you know, a lot of good stats. So, you know, offensive line and defensive line, that's really where the game is won. You know, you can have all the skilled players in the world, just like BYU does now on offense, but without that offensive line, you know, it's really all for nothing. You know, you can put a mediocre quarterback back there. You could put a mediocre running back, you know, in the backfield, and with a top-notch offensive line, I mean, they're going to make those guys look like all-stars. And, you know, when you do have a great running back, when you do have a great quarterback, is what you saw in past years, with a great offensive line, I mean, then the sky is just the limit for you, and that's what you saw, you know, in 2009, in those previous years with the BYU offense.
Yeah. Well, let's get you out on a non this year related question. So I really enjoyed, you were one of the panelists on the BYU Top 50 show that was on BYU TV not too long ago, which was a good summer fix for us Cougar fans waiting for the season to start. You said a couple things in there that struck me as interesting. I know you related that, you know, when you came to BYU in 2009, you didn't really know much about the university. You didn't know much about the history of the program. So I'd love to have you talk a little bit about your experience coming in 2009. You show up in spring, you know, you got recruited, you come from junior college. What was it like to step on a campus that's pretty darn unique in BYU after really not having a whole lot of knowledge ahead of time, what to expect when he got there?
Yeah, it was absolutely breathtaking. You know, when you come from a junior college, you know, your facilities, you know, they aren't that great. You know, I was fortunate to go to you know, one of the top junior colleges in California, academic wise, football wise, and facility wise. But you know, it's still, you can't even compare to, you know, a campus like BYU. And, you know, just to see the scenery and the mountains, and, you know, being in the Bay Area, you don't see too much. You know, obviously you have the Bay there, but it gets a little boring after a while. But, even now to this day, you know, I'm still here. I live in Orem, and you know, I just walk outside and I just admire, you know, God's work and the mountains and just the scenery. I absolutely love it. So that was the first thing that really caught my eye, and then I just noticed, you know, how clean the place was. You know, again, making comparisons to California, you know, it goes as far as seeing, you know, cigarette buds and there's even some gum stains, and you don't even see that here. So, you know, that's one thing I did appreciate a lot. And, you know, the facilities, man, just top-notch facilities, and the indoor practice facility, you know, the uniforms and the Nike contract, and you know, the big screen TVs in the locker room, and you know, it really does help with recruiting. Before I took my trip, 1 week earlier, I took a recruiting trip to Utah State, and Gary Anderson was the head coach there. It's going to be his first year, and I almost had committed to him, almost did. And I, you know, I told my mom, I said, I think I'm going to come here. And she was like, no, what about BYU? And, you know, I was like, nah, I don't really care too much. And the biggest thing with that was I was really impressed with Coach Anderson and, you know, his scheme and his goals that he had for me. And he was just a coach that I wanted to play for. I mean, I was fired up right then and there in his office. But, you know, when I came over to BYU and Coach Mininall talked to me, you know, he didn't talk to me at all about football. You know, he asked me what my personal goals were. You know, he talked about family a lot. We talked about, you know, our beliefs. And you know, that really struck home with me. But, you know, again, seeing, you know, the Nike contract and all the facilities, comparing that to Utah State, I mean, it was just, it was a no-brainer.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And I know that, of course, we'll get another shot at Coach Anderson this year in a slightly different venue than traveling up to Logan, and I'll actually be at that one because I live out here in Minnesota, so it's not too far away. Well, Brian, thanks for coming on the podcast. Appreciate your insight on the offense, and also letting us hear a little bit about when you decided, you know, for 4 years ago to come and join the Cougars at BYU, and we'll definitely have everyone follow you on Twitter. That's at Brian Logan 7, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's correct. You know, I just started really focusing on Twitter. I made a promise to myself that I'm going to start to tweet more and become a little bit more personal. So I'm trying to do that. So yeah, you can follow me. Before, I had some fans and you know, they're like, you need to tweet more. And I'm like, I don't care. I don't know how to do it. I mean, I don't even have Facebook, so that tells you how bad I am. But I'm learning a lot, so it's pretty fun to interact with the fans. So please, if you get an opportunity, come and join me. I'll try to make it entertaining for you.
Awesome. And well, don't go Johnny Football on us on Twitter. Keep it fairly civil. We'll definitely catch you on BYU TV as well. And anything else you'd like to tell the fans about before we sign off?
Yeah, you know, I am picking up my writing a little bit. You know, I'm trying to learn how to become a better writer, and I write blogs for BYU TV. BYU Sports .com, and it's called Logan's Corner. That will be published every Thursday, so you can check that out, and I'll be tweeting about that. And then also for the new website, Loyal Cougars, writing a couple of articles there as well. So, guys, please feel free and you know, take a look at my writing. You know, don't judge me too much. Still learning a little bit, but you know, fans seem to like it, and you know, the producers at BYU, they seem to like it as well. So I guess I'm doing something right. But again, with that, I'm still learning how to become a better writer. So that's about it. That's about what I got going for me, you know, BYU-wise.
Well, great, Brian. We appreciate it. And we're glad to have you on at LoyalCougars.com so that we can have someone that played football beyond eighth grade. you know, to the staff, or whose experience does not include several Madden titles and NCAA, you know, EA Sports football titles as the top of their football resume. So we're glad to have you on. We'll definitely catch you on BYU TV Sports and at Loyal Cougars. And again, thanks for coming on, and we'll have you on again soon.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Rise and Shout Podcast, Matt. This is episode 120.
Wow, shouldn't we have like a commemorative coin or something? Is 120 one of those numbers?
I don't know. I think it's 125.
All right.
So you got five
we'll
more
make
episodes.
We'll make some plans.
Commemorative coin. I like the sound of that. I like
so
the
we
sound
can do some really cool stuff with that.
So, Matt, I feel terrible about something. I feel absolutely terrible about something.
I'm not sure that the podcast is the place for whatever this is.
Oh, the podcast is absolutely the place for whatever this is, buddy.
All right, well, you're among friends. Tell us, what was bothering you?
So we did not talk about Ben Affleck being cast as Batman last week.
No, we didn't.
And I feel terrible that we did not have that discussion.
Or do you feel terrible that Ben Affleck has been cast as Batman?
Well, let's get into that, Matt. Let's get into that. So your initial reaction, you heard somebody say or you read it online, wherever it was, Ben Affleck is Batman. Your first thought was?
This has been reported by The Onion.
Okay, fair enough. My first reaction was, Ben Affleck? Really? That was kind of my reaction, was just like, you know, there'd been so many rumors, Ryan Gosling. Basically, you know, the funny part about these movies now is every single actor gets attached. You know what I mean? Like, I think I read rumors of about 42 guys playing Batman.
And I think I haven't heard the Napoleon Dynamite guy.
Affleck was not among the 40, though. So this was a great testament to the great entertainment journalism that's going on out there. So, Matt, after you had time to digest it, what did you think? Still thought it was The Onion.
It could be okay. You know, I'm not overly impressed with some of Mr. Affleck's previous work in the sense that in a way that makes me think he can play Batman. But you know what? I don't know that before this last series came out, if you had thrown Christian Bale out there, I don't know if I would have been jumping up and down either.
What are you talking about? Newsies didn't make you think he could play Batman?
And I think he did a remarkable job. So
you better tell me.
Yeah. You know, so I don't know. I'm reserving judgment. You know, we'll see what it looks like when it comes out. But at the end of the day, listen, we all know I'm going to go see it. And we all know if they make two, I'll go see it.
And we also know that's true for me, too. I did watch that tremendously bad Batman movie that had George Clooney and Arnold Schwarzenegger and Uma Thurman in it. So,
oh, my gosh.
Let's be honest. My secondary reaction, Matt, was, number one, like you said, did Christian Bale ever go, oh, Christian Bale, that's Batman? Probably not. And I know that when Michael Keaton was cast as Batman back in the 80s, if there had been an internet back then, it would have exploded.
Well, and when Heath Ledger was cast as the Joker, there was a lot of people, is this guy from 10 Things I Hate About You and A Knight's Tale is going to play Joker? Come on.
I think they referenced a different movie than that, but I think they're afraid of Brokeback Joker, but
anyway, but he had the same thing. People looked at what he had done, and they didn't see a clear reference to Batman.
Correct.
The unfortunate case in Ben Affleck's situation is that he made the movie Daredevil, which was unfortunate on many levels.
Yes, it was. I'd like those 2 hours back or 90 minutes.
And, you know, and I think he would too. So maybe this is another shot. He spent a lot more than 90 minutes on it. Not a lot more, but a little.
Maybe a couple hours.
But, you know, maybe this is a chance for redemption for Mr. Affleck.
Well, and rumor has it he actually wanted to play Batman the entire time. This is a dream role of his. I don't know if I ever believe that stuff, but
I don't know. It is a pretty cool role.
Who doesn't want to be Batman? I mean,
seriously.
And who doesn't want to talk like this?
I wonder. It'll be interesting to see how he does it.
Yeah.
Like, is Batman now going to have a Boston accent?
Yeah, there was a couple of people like, I'm wicked tired of this crime. I'm going to take down the Joker.
I'm going to pack the car over here.
Yeah, so we'll see. And before you guys make fun of our Boston accents, they're better than yours, okay? So stick it. See, that's like talking for Boston right there, right?
Yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
All right, so Matt, we've wasted the people's time enough. It's time to talk about the Cougars, which we're trying to desperately avoid. But we'll start with our first segment, Cougars in the News!
Cougars in the News!
So, somebody sent me a direct message, and I won't, they didn't say I could share this, so I won't say who it was, but they said it sometimes sounds like we're saying Cougars in the Nude. So, it is not Cougars in the Nude, it's Cougars in the News.
Ew, that would be a very different podcast.
Yes, yes, that is not this podcast. So, the first thing was several headlines pointed out that Bronco Mendenhall did say that the offensive line looked terrible on Saturday, and in other news, the sky is blue.
Yeah, in other news, it was raining.
Yes.
Like, everybody could see both of those things.
Yes, this isn't one of those games where sometimes you're like, when there's a lot of sacks or maybe the offensive struggles, you know, sometimes you think, I don't know if it's the offensive line. Was it just their defense was that good? Or were
coverage sacks.
Coverage sacks, or was it scheme? No, they were just terrible.
Yeah, they struggled. And, you know, he made some comments about how they sacrificed or traded execution for speed. And I don't know if he's getting to, hey, we're going to have to slow this down so that we can get better execution from the O-line, or if he's saying, well, these guys are just going to have to figure it out and adapt. But, you know, one of the things they talked about going into this season was the development of an offensive line culture.
Yes.
And I felt like Coach 2J was a great person for that. You know, and Coach and I should be a great person for that. But that is not what we saw this past weekend in Charlottesville.
Oh, heck no. That is definitely not what we saw. So let's also talk about other thing that was in the news is something else Bronco Mendenhall said, and we're recording this Tuesday night, so hopefully there's better news by the time you're listening to this podcast. But it was mentioned that All-American candidate wide receiver Cody Hoffman, who missed the game, and I don't think we can overstate what not having him probably cost the Cougars on Saturday, it's possible he may not play this Saturday either. Is this just like the worst case? Is there any player we could have afforded to lose less than Cody Hoffman?
I don't think so, especially after seeing what the defense did last weekend. I think that this is probably worst case scenario as far as losing someone. You know, we lost every cornerback, and we're out like, you know, recruiting kids from, you know, biology 101 or whatever. They're just walking into classes and pulling people out to play cornerback, and they seemed to do okay last weekend. So I don't think there is a loss as significant as the loss of Cody Hoffman.
Yeah, I can't imagine it. So we've got to just hope that he is able to come around on that. The other one, Matt, is something that I haven't really heard a lot of people talk about, and maybe I've missed those articles or posts on Cougar Board, but there was a play in the BYU game in which Taysom Hill started to scramble. Coming towards the sideline, and he was caught from behind by his shoes by Anthony Harris, junior safety for Virginia, who had a heck of a game, by the way.
And made a great effort on that play.
Made a great effort on the play. Here's my position. Last year before the injury, he doesn't even come close to even touching Taysom Hill's shoes. Taysom Hill seemed slow on Saturday. He did not seem like the explosive. When he ran, it was not like last year when he'd run and you'd go, wow, he is the fastest guy or one of the fastest guys on the field. He did not seem like one of the fastest guys on the field. Is that just – you think that's just conditions of the field, or do you think with that knee brace on and, you know, covering from knee surgery, being able to play and having a knee that's 100% what it was before aren't necessarily the same things?
Well, I mean, I'm trying to remember at what point in the game that particular play took place.
It was fourth quarter, I think. No, third quarter. It was third quarter.
I mean, but by then the field was, I mean, it was pretty
wet.
It was
a mess, yeah.
And it's difficult to, it's very difficult to run. I mean, there was standing water on the field. I mean, it's very difficult to use speed to your advantage. And, you know, and I think they've taken some precautions with Hill's knee. And he's got some, you know, and he's got some equipment that he's wearing to protect it. And that may be slowing him down a little bit, too. You know, I'm not in a place where I'm going to read a whole lot into that, to that play or even a couple plays like that in this game. It was such a strange day. The conditions got so bad in the second half with the water that it's really difficult to say, like, is this an indication he isn't 100%? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, he probably outruns that guy on a dry field 12 months ago.
I don't think probably. I think absolutely he does.
He almost had it then.
Yes,
I mean,
if he could have
stepped over the guy barely got a fist there in between his feet. So, I mean, he was close.
Yeah, and that was the difference between a 1 yard sack by Harris and a potentially 20 yard run.
Right. Because, great play by Harris.
Yeah, I mean, he had a heck of a game. So Matt, let's shift gears here to our preview of the Texas game. We could ad nauseum pick apart the Virginia game. We did a quick hit video. By the way, we do video now.
Yes, we do.
So we have had two quick hit videos, one after the podcast last week previewing Virginia, one on Saturday, a kind of sad video podcast.
A little somber.
So these quick hit videos that'll be on loyalcougars.com, where the podcast can also be found, will be approximately 5 minutes, and we'll be tackling a subject. There'll be another one this week as well before the UT game, where we'll focus more on that Virginia game. But right now, let's focus on the next opponent, a ranked opponent in number 15, University of Texas, UT, as they're called, the Longhorns. Coming to Provo, Matt, what did we learn from them about them in their victory over New Mexico State? Anything, or do you think the opponent's so poor that basically you might as well have been sitting in the stands while they're playing a little league team?
I don't know, it's quite like playing a little league team, but I don't know that we learned very much from a game against an opponent.
Depends
like
on
that.
If they had that girl that was really good. Remember that those that, YouTube videos that
yeah,
girl
she was
in Salt
from,
Lake?
Where was she from?
Yeah, somewhere in Utah. If she was there, I think it would have been entertaining. But anyway, yeah. All right.
But I don't know that you learn a whole lot from a team trouncing New Mexico State. I mean, we've talked about this team before, and how to evaluate a team when they perform well against them. So I don't know that we really know anything new about UT's team as a result of that game.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they put up massive numbers, right?
Right.
In that they rushed for 359 yards, for heaven's sakes, you know, and passed for nearly as many. So, I mean, you're talking about, you know, 700 yards in total offense, which they will not get 700 yards in total offense against BYU. I'm pretty confidently going to take the under on that one. But Ash did have his moments as a quarterback, just by the highlights. I didn't actually watch this game, but by the highlights had his moments, but he also threw a couple picks. So I kind of feel like, I mean, he's mobile, he can move around, and but what did we learn beyond, but we already knew that, right? So that's not something we learned. We learned they have a lot of good players on their team who could put up decent numbers against us. So Matt, we already talked about the loss of Hoffman. Who's going to step up besides Jamal Williams? How are they going to generate offense? I mean, obviously the offensive line's got to block better,
mm-hmm.
give Hill time. But what other position player do you anticipate if we're going to beat Texas and generate good offense? Who do you think has to be that person that steps up? If Hoffman, hopefully he's playing, but if he doesn't, who is that guy?
We need tight ends. If we don't have a deep threat, then he's got to have more options up close. So, I mean, my initial reaction to that question is we need to figure out a way to work tight ends back into the offense.
Do we have tight ends?
We have some on the roster.
Mm.
But we need, you know, somebody to really emerge. Now, if that doesn't happen, then Ross Oppo's got to become the Cody Hoffman.
Yeah. Yeah.
So one of those two things, either we got to have a tight end, a tight end has got to step up and fill that role, or Oppo's going to, it's his opportunity to prove that he can live up to his billing.
So Mitch Matthews, who's not technically a tight end, so before you guys start freaking out, had one catch, but I kind of see him as a tight end. He's kind of 6'6", you know, throw it to him kind of guy. And then Brett Thompson, who's listed as a tight end, had two catches. But, you know, like you said, we really need a threat there. We also had a lot of drop passes, not just the Jamal Williams turning into an interception, but there were Falslev dropped some. And, you know, there's just got to be, you know, they got to help. They got to help Taysom out on some of that. So I think quite frankly, it's got to be Oppo. I think Oppo has to become the guy if Hoffman's not there. I mean, in the stat line, you're going to say, oh, two catches for 59 yards and a 52-yard bomb. That's great. Except for that 52-yard bomb was on the last play of the game, and it didn't really count. I mean, it's great for the stats, but think about this for a second. Without that 52-yard bomb, Taysom Hill was 12 for 39 for 123 yards. Okay?
Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the good thing is he's got an arm, right? Hill can throw the ball a long ways. So we're not in last year where you've got this, well, we can't throw a pass longer than 15 yards. We can. The question is, can we be consistent moving it deeply? And can those tight ends be the people that help us do that by creating space in the middle of the field?
Yeah, and it's difficult. You know, you look at that stat line and you think about this game, and I don't mean to keep going back and let people off the hook because of the – because of the conditions.
Yeah,
and Virginia had to play in the same conditions.
Yes, they did.
But
you mean the Virginia offense that gained 223 yards?
Yeah, yeah, that one.
Yeah.
So, you know, but it's just hard. I don't think we really know what happened. We don't really know what we saw. You know, I'm not ready to hit the panic button, but you know, hopefully this was an aberration. Compared to what we're going to see as the season goes forward.
Yeah, yeah, hopefully. But you see a lot of people already pressing the panic button. There was an article on KSL by Patrick Kenahan already where basically we got to slow down the offense. And I just had Brian Logan on the program, and I think what he said is the most reasonable. You're not going to all of a sudden throw this all away and slow it down because of one game.
That would be stupid.
That would be terrible coaching. If you made a decision to go to this system, you got to give it some time to work. And as we've said all along, it could be painful at first. I didn't think it would be this painful. But we have warned, and other people have said that it could be this painful. So, Matt, let's talk about our expectations for Saturday against Texas. So, total offense, Matt. If I set the over-under we had against – let's see if I can scroll back up to it. Total yards against the New Mexico Bowl. Yeah, good job, Adam. I don't think that's the right one. Here we go. Total yards, 362 yards is what we had last week. I set that at 362. Are you taking over or under? I'm good at this.
I'm going to take the over.
You're going to take the over. Interesting. So we're going to get more yards against potentially a better opponent, though quite frankly, we don't know if Texas defense is that much better or even better at all than Virginia's. But yeah.
I think we get more yards against Virginia if Hoffman plays. And so I feel like if Hoffman does play against Texas, I'm a lot more comfortable taking the over here. If he doesn't play, I'm a little bit more nervous. But I think drop passes comes down a little bit. And it's, you know, they're another week in to installing the offense. So theoretically, we should see some improvement.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. Good point. All right. So I'm going to take the under, actually, because I don't think Hoffman's going to play. That's my prediction as of now. No insider knowledge on that, by the way. And I think we're going to struggle against a team that's going to be much better offensively, and it's going to limit. I mean, Texas is not going to punt. How many times did they punt? Like 47 times?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
I mean, they punted a lot. He punted 13 times for 537 yards. He had more punting yards than the combined offensive yards of the teams almost. Think about that for a second. I'll take the under on that one, Matt. So last week we talked about touches for Jamal Williams. You took the over on, I think I said it like 18 or something, and I took the under. Wow, was I wrong.
Yeah, who was right on that one?
So 35 touches, 33 carries, two pass catches for Jamal Williams. So let's – and think about this, 53 rushing attempts, and let's take out the three sacks. So 50 rushing attempts, and 41 of them were to Williams and Hill. Wow. I mean, clearly they were going to call Williams' number all day. So let's set it at 25, Matt. Total touches for Jamal Williams. Are you taking the over or the under?
I'm going to take the over. I mean, if we don't think, you know, if Hoffman's out, I'm taking the over on this easily.
I'm actually still going to take the under. I mean, I know this is what happened. I think they will try to get other players involved this week. But if you set it at 23 or 22, I'd be really tempted to take the over. Okay, one more over-under on the offensive side of the ball, Matt. A receiver or tight end not named Cody Hoffman having more than 3.5 receptions. Are you taking the over or the under on that? Somebody not named Cody Hoffman. And you can stipulate this is assuming he plays or assuming he doesn't play. However, sounds like you think he's going to play, so you can work it that way if you'd like.
If he plays, I'm taking the under.
The under, okay. I don't think it matters. I'll take the under both ways.
I'm close if he doesn't play.
I am close if he doesn't play, because 4 seems like a reasonable number for somebody else to get, I would think. So there were no sacks by the BYU defense, though they played very well and got – quite a bit of they say no QB hurries here in the stat line, but I think that's a misappropriation of that stat. So,
well, a hurry is a little bit of an objective stat.
Yes, absolutely. So Kyle Van Noy only 4 tackles, though 2.5 of those were for loss, as is his thing. So Matt, let's set his tackles for loss at 3. Are you taking the over or the under?
I'm taking the over.
Yes, so am I. I think he will wreak havoc.
Yes. I think he's going to be pretty riled up.
Yes, I agree. I agree. So, Matt, let's head to prediction time, okay? So the line on this game has moved to 7 in favor of Texas. So they are 7-point touchdown favorites, which is a pretty big line for two teams that – at the beginning of the season, I think a lot of prognosticators did not think there was that big of a difference between them. But Texas, good showing. BYU's poor showing certainly has moved. The line started at 3.5 and is already at 7. So obviously the money is flowing towards the Texas side of that line, at least so far. So Matt, at 7, are you taking Texas or BYU at 7?
I'm going to take BYU here.
Okay. You're going to take BYU. We'll get to final score in a second. I'm going to take Texas at 7. So, Matt, give us your final score, and what do you think the game looks like?
Final score is 24-21. And I'm going to – and this is crazy. Final score is 24-21. I'm going to back down here. I think that BYU gets closer than 7, but I think Texas wins this game. I don't know that there's enough time for the defense to install. I mean, even before it got real wet last week, there were signs that the offense still needs a little bit of time, and I think they're gonna struggle a little bit. And the Texas offense is gonna have time with the ball, more time than we'd like them to have, which is gonna create just opportunities for them to score more points. So I don't know that I feel like the defense is gonna let anybody down, but I feel like they're gonna be on the field a lot, and it's gonna allow Texas to get into the end zone.
Well, and they're a better offense than Virginia, right? So
well, yeah,
they'll put together some drives and move the ball the way Virginia pretty much could not the entire game. Matt, let's jump to I didn't give my prediction. 17-7 for Texas. I think this offense is. This is my guess, is assuming Hoffman does not play. If he plays, I'm with you. I think it's closer, and maybe we even pull out a victory, depending on if we could get a special teams or defensive touchdown or turnover at the right time. I just think this offense still doesn't know what it wants to be when it grows up, and I really don't think we, with Hoffman not in the lineup, I don't think we have an above average playmaker not named Jamal Williams on the entire offense. I don't see any evidence that anybody there is substantially among the receivers or tight ends above average. And you can't win that way, especially when your offensive line is playing poorly. I mean,
right.
You can make up for bad offensive line play if you've got playmakers that can, turn a 35-yard play, a broken play, into a 35-yard gain. Really hard to do that when you don't have dynamic players catching the ball, and only one of them running the ball. So, Matt, let's jump into the tweet bag. We got some good ones from Pat Hammond. That's at Crazy Coug Fanatic on Twitter. That's crazy spelled C-R-Z-Y, by the way. Which is more painful, Matt, losing a game we could have won, like the Virginia game, I'm assuming that's what Pat is asking, or a blowout loss, i.e. that Utah loss a couple years ago, 54-10? What do you find more painful, Matt?
A 54-10.
Yeah, see,
it's like that like erases all hope.
It depends on
when you get destroyed like that.
Yeah, that's fair. To me, it depends on the situation. It also depends on what you mean by which is more painful. At the moment, to me, a close loss is more painful, because when you got beat 54-10 by the end of the game, I was numb, right? I was just numb.
Yeah.
I wasn't painful. I wasn't upset. I was just like in shock. On Saturday, I really thought we were going to win. And then the interception happens, and you just think, oh my gosh, we're going to lose, And that kind of turnaround can be pretty painful. So a couple of questions from the Irish Mexican that's at Bullishism on Twitter. I'll start with this one, Matt. Big question, explanation of UVA loss. He gives us multiple choice. So
I like that.
Follow closely, Matt.
It eliminates a lot of extra thinking on my part.
That's correct, and we don't want you thinking. A, fluke explains the loss. B, sign of big problems. C, UVA is actually an underrated team. Or D, all of the above.
I have to just pick one.
Well, D gives you all of the above, you ninny.
No, but there's one that I wouldn't choose.
Oh, okay. I'll give you E, pick two. Sure.
Okay, then I'm going to pick A and B. I don't know that Virginia is a whole lot better than we thought they were. I do think there were some fluky things that led to a loss in this game. A 2.5-hour lightning delay impacts the outcome of a game.
Sure.
Do we win without that delay? I don't know. But it certainly affects the way the game turns out. The second was, this is perhaps the sign of some larger problems, but I don't know that there's enough data to really know that there are larger problems. Now, if this happens a couple of times, that's a pattern, and then we have a problem. But as of right now, I'm still reserving judgment on whether or not what we saw on Saturday is a sign that there's some overarching problem, either with the installation of the offense, or something with the coaching staff, or maybe these players aren't as good as we thought. I'm not ready to draw any of those conclusions just yet based on what we've seen.
So, Matt, before I answer the question, we averaged under 4 yards per play in those 93 plays. Over the past several years, with an offense that has been pretty terrible, we've only had a couple of games over that span where we averaged that few yards per play. Boise State last year in that terrible loss to Boise State, we averaged less than that. We were like 3.5 yards per play. This is an offense that has been terrible for now 3 games in a season. The only great offensive games we've had in that entire time frame where we've really hummed as an offense to the level that we used to quite frequently was playing teams like Idaho State and San Jose State and Weber State and Hawaii, you know? I am afraid of B. I am afraid that we do not have the talent on the offensive line and the skill positions to put together an above-average offense. But I'm going to pick A because there's a lot of fluky things about that game. The lightning strike, a dropped punt, Jamal Williams, who has been pretty sure-handed as a receiver in his year plus at BYU, having a ball go through his hands, and then it just happens to hit the guy in the chest. You know what I mean? There were a lot of fluky things about this game. We got not outplayed. I will hear. I love when people say that. Well, we got outplayed. How did we get outplayed? We outgained them in offense by 150 yards. Their offense was completely inept the entire game. So I don't think we got outplayed.
We gave them start. They started two drives inside the 20.
Right, right. And one of them, I mean, it's a slick field, and he bobbles the snap on a punt. You know what I mean? I don't really blame him that much in those kind of conditions. I think it's very hard to play in heavy rain, as anyone who's played in those conditions will attest, especially on special teams. Now, you can say, well, they didn't make those mistakes, and he punted 13 times. Well, great. He's a more experienced punter than our first-year punter. But I think it's a lot fluke. And this goes to his next question. Fans are optimistically pointing to single unexplainable losses like in 1980 and 83 and 96. And I wanted to pull up those seasons, Matt, but there are some losses, right, in those years that make absolutely no sense. The one that really doesn't make sense, and I think it's 83, right? The loss to New Mexico, yeah. Right? The loss to – no, that one was to Baylor in 83. It must be 80 that's the loss to New Mexico, where it's like New Mexico only won one game that entire year.
There was one in 80. Maybe I'm thinking of 83.
It's the New Mexico game in 80. They lost to New Mexico, and New Mexico was like 1-something that year.
Right.
So his question is this similar to that? So Matt, what's your take? Is this, could this loss end up being similar to that Baylor game to kick off 1983, the New Mexico game to kick off 1980, or what was the game that started 96?
Well, it wasn't the first game of the season in 96.
What was it?
It was the Washington loss.
Oh yes,
and it was like halfway through the year.
Yes, it was halfway through.
It was a late non-conference game.
No, it was early. It was the third game of the year, September 14th.
Okay, third game. So it was the last non-conference game.
Yes, and it's looking that way on the schedule.
So it that one's a little bit different because that team had already, you know, was already making some noise and had already had at least one real, you know, at least a national television
Texas A&M win, yeah.
Yeah. And so that one's a little bit different than the other two in the sense that they went into that game at Washington with every expectation that they should win, because of what they'd already done that year. With the other two, you know, to kick off a season, you get a weird loss and then the team turns it around and runs off a string of wins. I'd love to see that this is that, but I don't anticipate that it will be, mostly as a result of what we're looking at offensively. I think it was pretty clear before the lightning struck, so in the first quarter, that the offense is going to need some game time to really gel.
Yes.
And they did not get the type of exposure or experience that they need in this game last Saturday because of the way things panned out. And so I don't know that I expect them to see – I expect to see them going, you know, all cylinders firing on Saturday.
Well, that 96 game, Washington was 9-3 that year. So
it's not like they were a bad team.
They were not a bad team. And 80, I was wrong. New Mexico was not 1 and whatever. They were 4-7, but they were terrible. So that one – the other part is this team is not the 80 team, the 83 team, or the 96 team. I don't think we have any evidence that this team is that good as any of those teams. That being said, I think the panic button, everyone needs to take their finger off the button. You know, if they beat Texas this week, isn't everything forgiven? Don't we all kind of just go, oh, that was just a fluky loss, and now everyone's hope goes back up, right? Isn't that how it works if we win this week?
Especially if they beat Texas and Utah.
Yes, yes. And Utah's a different animal. Let's get to that for a second, Matt, before we close. Not going to go through everything here. On LoyalCougars.com, Jake Welch did a good job in the opponent notebook, which you should check out, where he goes through how everyone did, all of our opponents through the season. Anything jump out at you, Matt, that made you reconsider what you thought about any of the teams when the season started? Or was it kind of par for the course for week one?
It's kind of par for the course for week one. You know, I think some of the matchups we, you know, don't really give us a lot of information. And so, you know, I think it's something we need to keep an eye on if we really want to understand what we're up against week to week. But with only one game as a data point, there's not really, you don't really learn a whole bunch new, I don't think.
Well, I think I'll disagree with you only on Boise State.
Okay.
Just a 38-6 loss. Yes, it's on the road, but I was picking Boise State as potentially the best team we were going to play this year. I do not feel that way anymore. I mean, maybe Washington is a lot better than I think they are, but they looked absolutely, if you watch the highlights, they looked terrible. You know, Jake calls it, their offense looked BYU-esque. That hurts, Jake. But it's accurate.
That's a low blow.
That's a low but accurate blow. So, well, Matt, we are definitely out of time in this 120th episode of the podcast. We'd like to remind everybody, of course, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a positive review telling us how much you love the podcast. Also, check out LoyalCougars.com. There'll be a lot of preview stuff before Saturday going up. There's already some great stuff from Preston on his visit to Virginia, and he'll have stuff about going for those of you that that are going to some of the road venues. He'll have stuff coming up later on in the season on some of the other road trip stuff. You can tweet at us at @BYU_RiseShout. You can email the podcast, Adam@LoyalCougars and Matt@LoyalCougars, both of those followed with @.com. And of course, we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars. Forgiven me, but it'll still be 2 days till I say I'm sorry. Hold it, now I want to hoodwink, cause I make you stop, think. You'll think you're looking at Aquaman. I summon fish to the dish, although I like the chalet Swiss. I like the sushi, cause it's never touch a frying pan. Hot like wasabi when I bust rhymes. Speak like Leanne rhymes, because I'm all about value. Bert Camper's got the mad hits. You try to match wits, you try to hold me but a bust through. Can I make a break and take a fake out like a sink and ache and shake out like vanilla? It's the finest of the flavors. Gonna see the show, cause then you'll know the vertigo is gonna go, cause it's so dangerous. You'll have to sign a waiver. Can I help it if I think you're funny when you're mad? Trying hard.